them in order to be written into our founding document. Right now, it's anyone's guess how Granite Staters will decide on this in November, but you can bet groups in favor and against the amendment will be out in force all summer and fall. Some of their arguments will be familiar. Supporters have long said our lack of an income tax is a huge part of what they call the New Hampshire advantage, as well as an incentive for businesses to bring jobs to the state. And over the years, opponents have repeatedly argued that having no income tax makes the state rely too heavily on property taxes, which they say are more regressive and stay high even if you lose your job. Now, with this new amendment, a few more questions have been added to the mix, including how it might affect the state's bond rate and whether or not this ties the hands of future leaders to respond to changing priorities. Today in The Exchange, getting the public's input on the income tax. Let's hear from you. How will you vote on this amendment and why? Are there arguments or new information that could sway your decision? Or do you already know for sure where you stand? The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post your comments on our Facebook page. We have two guests for the hour. Mark Fernald is here. He's a Peterborough attorney, and he was the Democratic nominee for governor in 2002. 10 years ago, Mark, seems hard to believe. Welcome back to The Exchange.
Thank you, Laura.
Also with us, Charlie Arlinghouse, president of the Josiah Bartlett Center for Public Policy, a free market think tank based in Concord. And Charlie, welcome back to you, too. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, and Charlie, let's talk about the amendment for just a little bit before we dive into some of the arguments about the income tax. High threshold for constitutional amendments in the legislature. You need a 3/5 majority. We've seen many other amendments fall down, failing to meet that threshold. Were you surprised this one made it?
Well, given the very large majority in the legislature for the Republicans and a fairly conservative Republican majority at that, I guess I wasn't surprised. I mean, one of the bedrocks of sort of the current Republican thinking is opposition to an income tax. And it hasn't been a big subject of debate in recent years, but I think it's one of those kind of things where they thought, let's just cement this in stone.
And yet, Charlie, another amendment requiring a supermajority of the legislature to raise taxes and fees didn't pass.
Yeah, it's. I thought that was odd. I kind of expected it the other way around. And I suppose the one is right now, this year, an income tax seems like a fairly remote possibility to a lot of people. It has not really been the subject of a strong push in probably a decade. Even with very large Democratic majorities, it didn't even come up. So I think people looked at it and they said, you know what, this really isn't going to happen anyway. And they looked at some of the tax arguments, and while a lot of people are opposed to raising any taxes, there's some subset who wanted to preserve some flexibility, I think.
In case they wanted to raise a fee for a fishing license.
Right.
Or something
and I think, frankly, at the end of the day, that bill probably failed on that basis. On they said, yeah, every fee, you know, before I charge you more for a parrot, I got to have a supermajority. I don't know about that.
Well, Mark, what was your reaction when the legislature passed this CRCA 13, as it's called, and got it on the ballot for all of us to look at this fall?
Well, like Charlie, I wasn't surprised. This constitutional amendment is the pledge on steroids. As Charlie said, it's to cement in place the way we tax in New Hampshire. And so what the voters really need to do is look at how do we tax in New Hampshire. We have a tax system that has been designed by and loved by the top 1% in the state because they pay, on average, about 2% of their income in state and local tax. The middle, on average, pays about 6%. And then when you look at retired homeowners, they typically pay over 10% of their income just in property tax. Many times the elderly are paying 20 or even 30% of their income in tax. We're mistreating our elders, and we should stop. And this is going to cement all of that into place. If you're going to vote for this amendment, you're voting for the 1%. You're voting against the middle. And you're voting to continue mistreating our seniors.
I definitely want to get into some of these issues with both of you this hour. But a couple more questions just on the amendment itself. And Mark, to you, you know, we as a state, as you said, as Charlie said, have been talking about this for a long time, going back and forth. Your candidacy 10 years ago was based on your support for an income tax. I wonder, Mark, could your side see this as a good thing that now find this question maybe can be resolved on how we the people really feel about it? I mean, could this be a positive thing for you?
Well, I actually do think that the vote will be positive because I don't think it's going to pass. In fact, I think there's going to be a lot of people voting against it because they understand this is a vote. If you vote yes, you're voting for the property tax. And everybody hates the property tax. Everybody understands it's unfair. And to say this is how we're going to tax in New Hampshire forever, higher and higher property taxes, isn't the way to go. In the last 12 years, the total property tax bill in New Hampshire has doubled. Very few people have seen their income double in the last 12 years. So if people feel like the property tax is getting worse, they're absolutely right. It is getting worse. And it's because every time the state is short of money at the state level, they downshift some more of the responsibility onto the local property taxpayer. Again, you vote for this amendment, you know, you vote for the pledge, basically, by voting for this amendment. Pledge forever. And it means you're going to be paying probably in 2 years, the next election, you'll be paying 5 to 10% more in property tax. And in 12 years, probably you'll be paying twice.
Charlie, is there a potential downside with this amendment for those who favor the pledge, favor no income tax? What happens if voters say no to this? Does it then embolden lawmakers or potential governors to pass an income tax down the line? Hey, look at what the people said, you know, back in 2012.
Well, yeah, I mean, I suppose
if the people
that's
vote,
true.
No.
If people voted, if the vote on this amendment was something like 48 in favor, 52 opposed, it would absolutely embolden anybody supporting an income tax. I think, though, the likeliest scenario is that this amendment will get a significant majority of the vote, but will probably not get 2/3 of the vote. And I think what that would do is sort of cement into place the status quo, which is that most people think of the income tax as a losing political issue, and they think of but not 2/3 of the people. So it would be maybe a 60% issue where you wouldn't support one, but you probably won't see an amendment again. On the other hand, who knows? I mean, there are a couple of groups here. A lot of people would look at this and say, you know, 10 years ago when Mark ran for governor, we sort of had this kind of referendum where that was such a central focus of the campaign that year. And it was about a 60-40 vote. And so that would indicate to them that it's probably going to be about a 60-40 vote this year. I think that you lose a couple of groups in that mix. There are some people who voted for the Republican because they were Republican, even though they might be sympathetic to or at least open to the possibility of an income tax. That's a relatively small group of people. And there's some Democrats who are good Democrats in most other ways, but also think an income tax is a bad idea. So you'll see some cross-pollination there. But I think at the end of the day, you know, if this is a 60-40, 62-38 vote on the ballot, it doesn't embolden anybody in any way they're not emboldened today.
Because, again, it's a high threshold. 2/3 of voters, not just, you know, 51 to 49.
No, you need 67% of the vote, and, you know, nothing gets 67% of the vote.
Our phone number here in The Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Join us as we look at a constitutional amendment that will be on our ballots this fall, which would ban a personal income tax here in the Granite State. How do you plan to vote on this amendment? If you're not sure yet, what new information might change your mind? 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post your comments on our Facebook page. And I've gotten a lot of emails even before we went on the air today, gentlemen, and I want to share one with you. This is from Fred in Lee. He says, this is a possible question for Charlie Arlinghouse. Fred says, prohibiting an income tax on persons probably means that the fallback default position will be to increase the business profits and BEA tax, business enterprise tax, I think that is. Fred says, is this what the business community really wants, especially if a future legislature is a veto-proof, democratic, progressive legislature? What about that concern, Charlie, that if you ban income taxes forever, you have a lot of pressure to raise business taxes in the state?
Well, underlying that question is the notion that taxes must everywhere and always go up. And I'm not sure that I agree with that. I don't think taxes must always and everywhere go up, and they needn't go up. It's not clear to me that the way to lower anyone's taxes is to pass another tax. It is true that to support the income tax, people in general say we need to pass an income tax to, let's just say for the sake of argument, lower property taxes or lower business taxes. The last two states to adopt an income tax were New Jersey and Connecticut. New Jersey and Connecticut both passed the income tax with the express purpose of lowering property taxes with it. And the only two states in the country that have higher property taxes than New Hampshire are New Jersey and Connecticut. What happens, generally speaking, is if you put a lot more money into the pot, it gets spent. And and you're not going to lower somebody's taxes by passing another one. The way you lower somebody's taxes is by reducing spending or reducing obligations. And if you want to lower property taxes at the local level, you do it by eliminating obligations at the local level.
Well, that's the fear, Mark. And I know you've talked about this for a long time, too, that you can talk to your blue in the face that, you know, an income tax would lower property taxes. But there's a sizable number of people who don't trust politicians to do that.
There are 50 states in the United States. They're all trying to do the same things, educate children, plow roads, protect the environment. They all have to raise taxes to do it. And there are 50 different ways that it's being done. And we can look at those 49 other states and learn from what they do wrong, what they do right, to try to fix the property tax in New Hampshire. And if I've looked at other states and I've seen how much lower property taxes are in other places. If you took an average income New Hampshire family living in an average house and you moved them to Florida with the same income in the same house, their property taxes would be about half what they are here. And their overall taxes, even with the sales taxes in Florida, they would pay less in tax than they do here. If you took that same family and moved them to Delaware, where they have an income tax and no sales tax, their property taxes would be about one-third what they are here.
What about their overall?
And their overall taxes would be less than what they pay here. And if it was an elderly couple, a retired homeowners, you could move them to any other state and they would pay less than what they do here. Every retired homeowner, everyone who wants to retire and own a home here, should be against this amendment because the property tax is killing them.
And Charlie, I can see you want to jump in. We'll do that after a very short break. And we'll take your calls too, so stay with us.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and more on permanently preserving the pledge for no broad-based sales or income taxes in New Hampshire on the exchange on NHPR, and a 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, Political Turmoil in Egypt. New Hampshire weather for today, hazy sunshine, hot and humid, highs today 94 to 99 degrees. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows from about 60 from the White Mountains north, ranging to about 70 degrees in southern areas of the state. And tomorrow, hazy sunshine, hot and humid again, highs from 90 to 100 degrees. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from New England College in Henniker, New Hampshire, honoring and preserving the mission of Chester College. Information at nec.edu. And the McAuliffe Shepherd Discovery Center in Concord, where visitors can tour the universe in the comfort of a temperature-controlled planetarium theater. Starhop.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a constitutional amendment to ban income taxes in the Granite State will be on our ballot this November, allowing voters to have a say in this long, long debate here in New Hampshire. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. Send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. Also, The Exchange is now on Facebook. We hope you'll go to our page, join the conversation there. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. How do you plan to vote on this amendment? And why? And if you're not sure how you'll vote yet, what information might help you make up your mind? Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, before we go to the phones, Charlie, I know you wanted to jump in. We were talking about this point that, you know, other states have income taxes, have sales taxes, and their overall tax burden has not gone down. We talked with Mark about the distrust people have that an income tax would be used to lower property taxes. Go ahead and jump in.
Well, Mark makes a point about taxes being lower in Delaware, taxes being lower in Florida for certain people. One of the difficulties we have is that we're not starting at zero. We're not going to recreate ourselves and look exactly like they are with the exact mix of business and residential people that they have in Miami, let's say, or in Wilmington, Delaware. We don't start from scratch. We do know we have a great deal of experience in this country in what happens when you start where you are today and you add something to that mix. And all that would happen with an income tax is we would take more money from the people and we would distribute it. And we would hope that taxes go down. It doesn't ever happen that way. It just doesn't. When people add a large new tax of any and all kinds, they do not... your overall tax burden does not go down. And I think people have a sense of that, that every time the government says it's going to do something, they're going to lower taxes. I said to an income tax proponent once that I said, you know, you hate the property tax, you love the income tax. You come forward with a proposal to eliminate the property tax. And replace it with an income tax. And I'll take a more serious look at it. But generally speaking, your proposal is for the government to spend more money.
This is the skepticism that we keep going around and around on. Go ahead, real quick, Mark, and then to our callers.
I hear Charlie loud and clear. He's saying, if you think the property tax is a problem, sorry, there's no solution.
Nope.
And I disagree with him on that, that we can't lower taxes by changing the way we tax. In 1999, after the Claremont decision, we needed to fund education. We raised some taxes. We cut property taxes for the only time in living memory. And by living memory, I mean the memory of my father, who's 83.
I have to respond to that because I'm not saying we can't do anything about it. I'm saying that Mark's specific solution won't work, that I have ideas on lowering property taxes. I just don't want to do it by adding another income tax to you.
Okay, we will have a chance to hash this out, guys, but I really want to get our listeners involved. Lots of time, though, to go through all these issues. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. And up first from Lebanon is Clifton. Hi, Clifton. You're on the air.
Hello. Good morning.
Go ahead. I think this is former Senator Cliff Belo.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to point out that when our state constitution was adopted, the tax law that was in effect, which came out of the provincial legislature, which is the original laboratories of democracy, said, whereas it is necessary that there should be an equitable rule established by law for making rates and taxes, so that every person may be compelled to pay in proportion to his income. And then it went on to describe the property tax based on the income that property produced. Homes that didn't produce income weren't subject to the property tax originally.
Like people that lived in homes but didn't farm it and make money from that land.
Is that
what you're saying?
Right. Yeah. Land. And what was interesting, buildings, mills, wharves, ferries, other buildings were taxed at 1/12 of their annual net income. So it was a... It was a sophisticated concept of looking at the net income as the basis for the value of property. And my point only is that we all pay taxes out of our income. We just don't pay in proportion to our income in New Hampshire. When you look at what the top 1% pays, about 2% in state local taxes, compared to the bottom 20%, which is over 8% of their income, we're the sixth most regressive state in the country because the poor, the bottom 20%, pay at 4 times the rate of the top 1% compared to all the other states.
Okay, Clifton, thanks for calling in. Couple concepts there, gentlemen. One, Charlie, that this idea of taxing based on income is in the Constitution. It's an old idea in New Hampshire.
If you look at the history of taxation in New Hampshire, it is true that in the latter days of the 1700s that the attempt was to tax based on income. They moved very quickly away from that in the late 17 and early 1800s to tax on the basis of wealth. Now, they didn't move entirely, and they never move entirely in one direction or the other. They added other taxes, and they moved to... It's why, when it came to our last significant tax reform in 1970, we had a system where we taxed things like water wheels, and we taxed donkeys, and we taxed rabbits and things like that, being an attempt to tax some of those things. But we had a hodgepodge. We've always had a hodgepodge of taxes. There's always been some discussion of that in the Constitution. On regressivity, I do want to know, just because it's important that people understand this, that Jean Shaheen, when she was governor, had a tax commission. And Jean Shaheen, for listeners who don't go back that far, was considered at the time a good liberal, a good regular establishment Democrat. So it's not like she was a right winger trying to get a funny solution. But her tax commission said, and I didn't agree with everything they said, but they found that the income tax was more regressive. The income tax we would have to have was more regressive than the property tax that we had. And there were that the property tax was largely progressive. And Mark is right that at the very upper income levels, it is regressive, and at the very lower income levels, it is regressive. But broadly speaking, it is more progressive than an income tax. And I think that, in fact, colored her thinking at the time and colored a lot of people's thinking at the time. Again, this is Jean Shaheen's tax commission. This is not some right-wing conspiracy plot.
You know, I want to talk about something you said, Charlie, and that's the hodgepodge. This is the idea that New Hampshire has an interesting mix of taxes and fees. And, you know, Mark Fernald, some economists outside New Hampshire have said this is a source of strength for New Hampshire. Unlike states who have income and sales taxes, which rise and fall dramatically during boom and bust cycles, our funny hodgepodge is actually very stable and helps us hang on during the tough times.
property tax is stable because you have to pay it whether you have the money or not. That is not necessarily a source of strength, at least if you look at the people who are forced to pay it when they've lost their job or they've been downsized to a lower income. The idea that the property tax is more progressive than income tax is just silly. And Charlie and I will have to talk about that offline. I'll go back and dig out that Blue Ribbon Commission. Let me go back to Cliff's point about the Constitution. This is what our Constitution says right from day one. Every member of the community has a right to be protected by it in the enjoyment of his life, liberty, and property. He is therefore bound to contribute his share in the expense of such protection. So the question we should always be asking is everybody paying their share? If a wealthy person's paying 2% of his income to support government and an elderly grandmother is paying 20%, are they both paying their share? I would say they're not, and we need to change this. And we've had huge budget cuts in the last year, which people like Charlie have argued were absolutely necessary. There was no alternative. But the fact is, if the top 1% or the top 10% in this state who have about half the income, they don't pay half the tax. If we had them pay taxes at the same rate as the people in the middle, we could reverse all those horrible budget cuts to the hospitals and to education, to health and human services, and give most of the people in the middle a tax cut.
What about the so-called New Hampshire advantage, though, Mark? The idea that businesses, if they have to choose between us and North Carolina and Colorado and California, they look at our tax structure and they go, wow, you know, I think I'm going to come there.
And a lot of businesses look at New Hampshire and they say, you've got just about the highest corporate income tax in the nation, 8.5%. You've got the third highest property taxes in the nation, and I'm going to be owning property as a businessman. And so maybe those taxes aren't all that terribly low. If it's somebody who, for some reason, has very small real estate needs for their business. But if someone's coming here to do manufacturing, have a big plant, and then they're going to pay the 8.5% income tax on corporate profits, it isn't necessarily the best place to locate a business. If it were, Massachusetts would be empty now, if you believed all this rhetoric, and New Hampshire would be full of all those businesses.
No, there are other factors. Massachusetts has the universities and the strong research capital there and so forth. So I don't think businesses say, that's the only reason I'm coming to New Hampshire, but I'm wondering if you see that as an advantage for New Hampshire.
Vermont wouldn't have a lower unemployment rate than New Hampshire if we believed all the rhetoric about taxes and how we have this huge advantage and everybody wants to come here.
Our phone number again is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. Try and keep those emails short. Charlie, go ahead.
The notion of tax competition is never absolute, and that would be silly. There's no state in the country is ever going to entirely empty out, no matter how stupid they are. I mean, the fact that anyone still lives in California is proof positive of that. However, it is without question true that there is competition at the borders. There is competition among site location. There's competition in particular coming out of a recession that businesses decide where to relocate. New Hampshire is, whether it should be or shouldn't be, is for most businesses, but not all businesses, near the top of that list. Certainly the Tax Foundation has a seventh. It does have our high business, our high corporate profits tax, the business profits tax, as a negative factor. And we should definitely lower that. 8.5% is just too high. We should work on lowering that. But it is true that when you consider another tax or consider raising a tax, you need to think about what you're doing. You need to think about the signal you're sending to businesses. And frankly, the biggest reason that most of us are opposed to an income tax is not that we think taxing income is immoral or anything like that. It's that we think it would send a negative signal. And you talk to businessmen, and they all agree with you on this. There's a reason BAE Systems, for example, is on the north side. They have a lot line. They have a state line lot. It's on the north side of the state line, not the south side of the state line. And there's a reason for that, and it has everything to do with taxes.
Real quick, Mark?
I agree with Charlie. If we're going to talk about changing the way we tax, we need to think about it and think about its impact. The purpose of this amendment is to stop thinking, and I think that's wrong.
Our phone number again is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post your comments on our Facebook page. And gentlemen, here's an email that came in this morning from Michael, who says, I like a sales tax because it would follow the economy. But capital letters. Michael says, I am against the income and sales tax for two reasons. One, the states that have had these taxes for many years are no better off than New Hampshire is today. Two, all of our other taxes, and we do have far too many, would not be eliminated and or reduced enough to offset these additional taxes. So that's the skepticism we talked about before, that, you know, a lot of people don't think if we had an income tax that other taxes would go down. But then Michael goes on to say, our 9% rooms and meals tax is far too high. We can choose to pay it by simply not eating out. The federal income tax does not work because of far too many exemptions. He says, I'm for a flat tax. And concludes by saying, like I said, I would like a sales tax because they would follow the economy, but our current property tax would have to be eliminated, and they would not do that. So Michael says, I accept what we have as a known. What do you think about this email, Mark? I mean, some of these concepts we've talked about before, but the broad idea that, you know, the system as it is now is working pretty well. No other states with all these taxes are better off than we are. And deep, deep skepticism that an income tax would, by extension, lower other taxes.
He says he would favor a flat tax. If we could flatten our tax system so everybody was paying their share, like our Constitution says, as I said before, the people in the middle and the retired homeowners would pay less in tax than they do now, and the wealthiest would pay more. I think we should look into going to that sort of system. This amendment says, nope, stop looking. But let me say one more thing about what he said, because then he said, well, let's have a sales tax, but let's ban an income tax, let's ban a property tax. There are three ways to tax. You can tax what people own. You can tax what they buy. You can tax what they make. Property tax, sales tax, income tax. And if you put all your eggs in one basket, which we do now, pretty much all the eggs are in the property tax basket. It's 2/3 of all the taxes we raise in New Hampshire. You're going to find people who aren't paying their share because they're wealthy, but they don't own income. Or in another system, you might find people who have, they have a lot of income, but they're not buying a lot of stuff or whatever it might be. And so most states and most experts have looked at this and said, you need to have a mix. So you have to have more than just one of these three major taxes so that everybody, you know, people can't avoid completely their responsibilities just by making some decisions.
Charlie?
I think we all agree with that there is an advantage to New Hampshire in having a hodgepodge of taxes to having a large number of taxes. And I don't think anyone would ever suggest we move away from having a multitude of taxes to having just one tax and nothing else, because there are problems with that. The problem people have is the skepticism inherent in this letter is that everybody who says they want to lower my taxes, I don't believe they're going to. And it's not, for example, that I believe Mark doesn't really want to lower taxes. I believe that if there's another big engine of taxation, that politicians will be unable to resist the impulse to take that money and use it for other purposes. We'll help you out a little bit, and we'll help us ourselves out more. And it's true that economists believe, any economist would tell you that they believe taxation should be as broad as possible, with as few loopholes as possible, as few exemptions as possible. He's right about there being too many deductions and credits and exemptions in the federal tax code. And there should be zero, if at all possible. On the other hand, we also look at these things, for example, the property tax, and we think there should be almost no exemptions on that. Yet I don't think anyone in the state honestly thinks that an exemption for low-income elderly homeowners is a bad idea.
And towns, some towns have that.
Every town in the state of New Hampshire has that.
But it's very small in many towns.
In many towns it's very small. In some towns it's very large. But frankly, by the way, this is the right way to do things, both for the elderly, and I don't see anything wrong with extending this to low-income homeowners as well, where you say not that your taxes are capped, but you say that the first X number of dollars in value of your house, maybe it's $100,000, is exempt from taxation. So you still pay taxes, but the basic cost of shelter is maybe exempted.
Michael, thanks a lot for that email. And again, our email address is exchange@nhpr.org. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Join us as we look at this amendment that's going to be on your ballot this fall, banning an income tax here in New Hampshire. And in North Sutton is Tom. Hi, Tom. You're on the Exchange. Thanks for calling in. Good morning, Tom. Are you there? You're on the Exchange. All right. It sounds like Tom's phone is not coming through. I hope he calls back. Here's another email in favor of a sales tax from Michelle. She says a sales tax would be the way that everyone in New Hampshire could contribute easily and inexpensively to fund education and state infrastructure. Michelle asks, would this really hurt New Hampshire? If someone believes yes, how so? She says we already have a 9% rooms and meals tax, which is higher than our Massachusetts neighbor. If we implemented a small sales tax, we'll continue to have the greener grass than our neighbors. And again, I know the amendment, Mark, is not about a sales tax, but gosh, I've gotten two emails from people saying that they think that's the way to go.
And I think the key word in there is where she said this would be an inexpensive way to support government. Government isn't cheap, and anyone who's looking for an easy way out, I just would ask them to dig into the numbers deeper. You know, if we did a 5% sales tax, you might be able to cut the property tax by 20-25%. It just, the property tax is so huge. Even a sales tax at a fairly high rate can't take a big chunk out of it. And as for all those people who, you know, you keep saying skepticism that we can fix the problem. Charlie keeps saying skepticism. And I guess what I'd say to Michael sent in the email is, well, let's work on this. Let's find a way that we change the tax system, but we put in some controls so that we're not feeding more money, spending more, that we are truly reforming the system. What if we had a new tax and then we said we put some sort of limit on the property tax so it can't go over 1% of the property value or
something?
So that
becomes part of the law as well.
Yeah, so that you know that you're going to get the, you know, a control on the other side. Warren Redman was on your show 2 or 3 years ago when you did your, I don't know, 100 years of 100 great people or something. And one of the things he said was that if we had an income tax dedicated to education, he would be in support of that idea. And I think a lot of people are in support of that idea because they know the property tax is primarily education funding and they know it's unfair and we need to change it.
Well, we've got a lot of people who want to jump in with both of you, so we'll take more calls in just a moment, more emails as well. Our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here. We'll be right back.
I'm Kate McNally. Join me for another round of live music with the Tupelo Public Radio Project. This time, I'll be joined by Lucy Kaplansky.
You taught me how to win the card games we used to play. I could always beat the other kids, but all bets are off today.
We'll be at the Tupelo Music Hall in White River Junction Friday night at 8. For tickets and information, visit the Folk Show page at nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from BAE Systems, remembering our servicemen and women and emergency response professionals and their commitment to our country and communities on this Independence Day. And from the New Hampshire Lottery since 1964, contributing more than $1.4 billion to education. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the debate over a constitutional amendment banning a statewide personal income tax. This question will be on the ballot in November, asking Granite Staters whether they want to forbid income taxes or not. Give us your thoughts. How do you plan to vote and why? 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. And Charlie Arlinghouse, Mark Fernald, let's go back to our callers and try Tom in North Sutton again. Hi, Tom. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, go ahead, please.
Yeah, thank you for putting me on the show. I'm enjoying this very much. 15 years ago, my wife and I, in contemplation of retirement, had a criteria that we'd like to live in a state that had no income tax, and we chose New Hampshire. So we built here, and we've really enjoyed that decision. Unfortunately, the comments that I've heard about raising or not voting on this possible amendment to the Constitution, I think are invalid. If we have an income tax, this is purely an excuse to increase spending. We heard a little earlier on your show, your proponent for that income tax pointed out that the House had made a lot of spending cuts, and if we'd had an income tax, they wouldn't have had to do that. So there you go. He wants to go ahead and just tax and spend.
You know, a quick question for you, Tom, if I could, and hopefully your phone line will stay good with us. It's often said that retirees do pay income taxes because we do have an interest and dividends tax here in New Hampshire. Is that your situation?
Yes, I do pay. I do pay that tax.
Yeah, but you still would prefer to have the situation paying that tax than an income tax.
Yes, because the problem with an income tax is it just provides an excuse to spend. And
okay.
The income tax is not cannot be put in a fixed position. And what I mean by that, they may start out with a rate of 2%, and before you know it, it's up to 9%. Just look at some of the other states that have had income taxes and look at the history of what's happened.
Okay. Tom, thanks a lot for calling in. Real quick to you, Mark Fernald.
Yeah, I guess I'd tell Tom to look at Delaware. They're a relatively low-spending state. They have an income tax. And I think it's partly about the culture of spending in a particular state. Former Governor Thompson said, and it's repeated often, that low taxes comes from low spending. But what Tom is saying, and no, it's the other way around, that you know, high spending comes from the taxes you choose, not what you're choosing to spend money on. I'd also say that at the state level, oftentimes our thinking is completely backwards. At town meeting, we often decide to spend more money because we think we need a new fire truck or the police chief needs a raise, and we know it's going to increase our property taxes, but we make that choice. But at the state level, particularly last year, they made the choice there was nothing in all of state government that was so important that we would consider changing anything about the way we tax. Instead, we just did cut, cut, cut.
Well, they had an $800 million budget deficit to deal with, too, so.
True, but they could have changed some. They didn't have to make all those cuts. We could have decided, you know, we need to spend more than this 45% cut in UNH. We need to spend more than $125 million from our hospitals.
We could have decided that, but let's be honest, at some point they are making a decision. They're deciding that in the middle of a recession, in the middle of coming out of a recession, that they want to not raise taxes. Taxes, at the end of the day, are a price on economic activity. And it's a price we pay in economic activity. But they did make a decision. And I want to be clear about this because Mark's the implication of what Mark's saying is they just put their head in the sand and put blinders on. They made a conscious decision that we're not going to raise taxes and that that is important for the economic future of the state.
Let's take another call. Thanks for that one, Tom. Theo is waiting in Manchester. Hey, Theo, thanks for hanging on. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I've got a comment. We have a 400-member House that we elect every 2 years, and I think kind of with the purpose of being very responsive to the people. And I'm wondering if this is really an anti-democratic measure, because we elect this very responsive House to essentially run the affairs of our state. And by voting for this, we're kind of saying we don't trust our House members, we don't trust the system to elect people to spend what we need and to tax what we need and to do what we need to run the state. And so we have to put in this long-term cap that's going to, I think, cause problems down the road.
Theo, thanks for calling. And to you, Charlie, this is a question that also came up on our roundtable with state lawmakers yesterday. Why isn't it good enough to let elected leaders make these decisions every couple years, whenever it seems to bubble up? Why do we need to put this in the Constitution?
Well, I mean, it might be good enough. I'm in favor. I'm not opposed to having having lawmakers debate subjects like this every 2 years. I'm not opposed to having these kind of discussions every 2 years. On the other hand, I'm not opposed to sticking this on the ballot and saying to people, you know what, this is a big issue in New Hampshire. We all know that the income tax since the 1920s, the income tax has been a dominant issue in the state of New Hampshire. And we're saying to the to people of New Hampshire, not if 51% of you vote to ban this, it's banned. But if two-thirds of you, if two-thirds of the state of New Hampshire, which is a huge number, decide that we're not going to have an income tax, that's going to go into the Constitution, then there's a ban on it. But not unless two-thirds. It seems to me that that's a reasonable compromise. We are going to vote on this on the ballot. We're going to have a kind of a referendum on it, but it's not a 51% referendum. It's a 67% referendum. If we get 65% of the vote in favor of banning an income tax, we're going to say, you know what? Not enough. We're going to still debate it every 2 years. And that seems to me a decent compromise.
Does this seem like a referendum to you, Mark? I know we touched on this earlier, but
Theo is right that this is the wrong way to govern. We elect 425 people every 2 years to go to Concord and figure out how we're going to run the state. And if people don't like whatever decisions are made about taxes, spending, or anything else, they can vote those people out and put other people in. So I think it's unnecessary. And I also think it's dangerous because it will have an impact on our bond rating.
Let's go next to Center Harbor. Linda's calling from there. Hi, Linda. Thanks for joining us. Go ahead.
I was wondering whether people have taken into account the income from snowbirds. I pay $7,000 in property tax. If you increase my income tax, I don't live here. I won't pay income tax. And if you decrease my property tax, it's a bargain for me, but it doesn't help the state.
So, Linda, go ahead. So you live in Center Harbor just part-time? You're a snowbird?
Yes, I live out in Little Bear Island, and of the 40 families there, very few of them are New Hampshire residents.
Okay, so are you saying tax there that the property tax is good because you can capture some of this snowbird income?
Yes.
Okay. All right. You know, this is something that has come up in the past, gentlemen. If we switch to a more income tax-based situation, Mark, we wouldn't be able to capture the second home income as well as we do now.
The education income tax plan that passed the House and Senate in 1999, but then was killed by Jean Shaheen, that had in place a way to target the relief to homeowners through homestead exemption. And so it meant that the second homeowners would continue pretty much to pay what they're paying now. They wouldn't get the relief the way she was saying they would.
The Hager-Below-Fernald plan had a clause for that, and it was stopped by Jean Shaheen, and it gives me the opportunity to utter three very rare words for me. Thank you, Jean Shaheen. I guess that's four. But those kind of considerations come into play. I would only say that if you can question about how snowbirds who pay property taxes, then there's also a question about people who commute to Massachusetts and are paying income tax to Massachusetts and how you account for those things. There are always going to be, with any tax in a state-based taxation system, some sort of distortions on the edge. And while I think that's a good point that she makes, I think that it, you know, and particularly because it's on my side. But I wouldn't necessarily let it control policy.
You know, I want to ask you quickly, Charlie, something that Mark raised a minute or two ago and that Senate Minority Leader Sylvia Larson raised yesterday, concern that the bond rating agencies will not like this income tax amendment. They'll wonder if New Hampshire has the fiscal flexibility to respond to a crisis. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't think she's wrong. I just think it's overblown. It is true that bond agencies, and this is not questionable, bond agencies like the fact that we have this giant source of taxation that we don't tap into. If the bottom fell out, we could go to that and we could pay off our bonds. It makes it easier. What they like, it's sort of like credit cards. Credit card companies like you to have room on your credit card, so that you didn't use the whole thing. You have a little extra room. And bond rating agencies are like that. Does it have an impact? Does it have a negative impact on our bond rating? It has a very, very, very minor negative impact. But yes, it does. But it's tangential. It's similarly tangential is on my side of the fence, people say that this will grant businesses some degree of certainty, that we're not ever going to have an income tax. And I think that is a net plus for banning an income tax. But again, very tangential, very small, because realistically now they don't expect us to lurch into an income tax anytime soon. And so both of those things, yes, but not huge.
All right, let's see if we can get one or two more calls in. And up next is Joan in Dover. Hi, Joan. Thanks for waiting.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
We can. Go ahead.
Okay, fine. I just a couple of points I'd like to make. Firstly, while we claim that we do not have any broad-based tax in New Hampshire or any income tax. In fact, if you do as I did, which is, what is the expression, work my butt off for 50 years and do some savings and investings, that's being taxed now. It is, in fact, an income tax on my interest and dividends. It's a broad-based tax, but it only applies to people who are retired. So it's certainly not accurate to say that we don't do any income tax here. As far as the elderly exemption for property tax, I have investigated it here. I'm told that essentially in order to be eligible for an exemption because of my age and lack of income from my property tax, I would have to sell my house.
You'd have to be super, super poor, have no assets whatsoever.
Actually, yes. I have relatives who died 3 or 4 years ago, and they had an elderly exemption, but I believe they left an estate of approximately $60,000 after all debts were paid. So, and I'm not, I really just as soon not do that. The property tax that I'm paying on this house, which I bought in 1968, is well over $7,000 a year, which equates to more than a third of my total income.
This is, again, the argument that you've been making, Mark Fernald, that elderly people in New Hampshire get hit twice, once by high property taxes when they're no longer bringing in a paycheck, and second by the interest and dividends tax. So,
what she just said is unconscionable. We should be ashamed that we're doing this to people like Joan. And I would add that, yes, we have an income tax now on interest and dividends. And so what we're saying to all the elderly who saved for their retirement and are paying this income tax is you'll keep paying, but other people will never pay an income tax, will never pay their, you know, a share of their income towards supporting government. Instead, we'll do it all out of property and we will nail the elderly to the wall for another 50 years.
Are we nailing the elderly to the
wall,
Charlie?
Absolutely. One third of her income? What your taxes would be if they were one third of your income.
I would urge Joan to look into the elderly exemption again, because I think whoever told her that gave her bad information. You do not have to be destitute to qualify for an elderly exemption. Far from it. I know people who have elderly exemptions who are not destitute, who are, for example, not just living off their Social Security, but are also receiving a pension and nonetheless qualify for an exemption, which saves them on the initial initial value of their house, usually between $70,000 and $150,000 of value. If your house is larger than that, then the excess is still taxed, but the initial small amount is still there. So there is help to be had there as well. We are not socking it to elderly people, or they would be leaving the state in droves, not coming here in droves. And they are not going to be helped by passing an income tax.
Joan, thanks a lot for calling in. And here's an email that just came in. This is from Wayne, who says, I find myself in agreement with Charlie on the importance of not creating or raising new taxes. But, Wayne says, find the idea of a permanent solution is undemocratic. Jefferson warned of the perils of having a U.S. Constitution that was not ratified by each generation. And I'd say we've seen some challenges as a result of not heeding Mr. Jefferson's advice. What do you think about that, Charlie? He's with you on not creating or raising new taxes, but does have concerns about making this a permanent part of the Constitution.
Well, I think I said before, I think there are going to be three groups voting on this income tax. People who are absolutely opposed to it and will lock it into the Constitution. People who are absolutely in favor of it and who will therefore not lock it into the Constitution. I think there's a third group, which Wayne represents, which are people who think that we shouldn't have an income tax, but would just assume we vote on it. What that means is that the amendment as referendum is going to be misleading, that the opposition to an income tax is going to be significantly higher than the vote the referendum gets.
Because there's this middle group like Wayne.
Because there's a group like Wayne. No income tax, but let's not lock it in.
Yeah.
And I get that.
What do you think, Mark, what kind of activity do you expect on this amendment over the summer and fall in terms of there's various groups getting together pro and various groups getting together against?
I think there'll be a lot of activity. I think it's a central question. And, you know, and on this issue of, you know, what do people really believe? People in New Hampshire have been polled several times in the past asking, would you support an education income tax? Would you support an income tax if it cut your property taxes in half? Question's been phrased in various ways, and over and over, over 50% say, yes, I would support that kind of change. The reason why we haven't made the change is the skepticism, the fear that this is not fixable. Charlie has said several times today, basically, we can't fix this problem. And for him to say, well, the elderly need to apply again for an exemption, two problems with that. First of all, a lot of towns just don't have the exemptions, or they're very small. And second of all, the whole exemption process is to say the way we get the elderly, stop nailing them to the wall, is we increase property taxes on the people in the middle. But that's not a solution, and people don't like that.
I'm not saying the solution, this problem is unsolvable. I think this problem is solvable. I think it's not solvable by the one giant baseball bat club that Mark wants to beat the economy with. And that's a very different thing. And I mean, I you know, we can disagree about this and say there are different ways to approach property taxes without saying, if you don't support my solution, you're just a moron. And I think we need to be careful about that. Secondly, every single town in the state has an elderly exemption. It's not true that some of them don't. It is true that some of them are small, but that's not what he said. Some of them are small, but any relief is better than no relief. Is that the only opportunity? No. There are other opportunities. I have supported routinely tax caps for towns because I don't think towns take care of their spending the way the state does.
Well, I can see that this is going to be a hot debate starting on a hot day today in the summer. And gentlemen, I hope that we can talk about this again before the ballot question is decided by voters in November. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens. Mark Fernald, thank you very much for making the trip, and thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Mark Fernald, again, a Peterborough attorney and the Democratic nominee for governor in 2002. Charlie Arlinghouse, good to see you. Thank you for
Always
being here
Always a pleasure.
As well. Charlie Arlinghouse, president of the Josiah Bartlett Center for Public Policy, a free market think tank based in Concord. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our interns are Samantha Johnson and Claudia Camerino. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange is now on Facebook. Become a fan of our Facebook page where you can learn more about upcoming shows, what we're planning, and get extra links and material. The Exchange executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, Reverse Innovation, a new book by a Dartmouth professor examines how more advances in technology, medicine, and consumer products these days are coming from the developing world, then adopted by wealthier countries, a reversal of traditional patterns of innovation. We'll hear some examples and why our guest says this could benefit everyone. Email us at nhpr.org and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.